For WKU Public Radio, this is Joe Corcoran. As we wrap up our historic look at the War of 1812, the focus of the war has shifted south to the Battle of New Orleans and the end of the war. Our historians, Dr. Jack Thacker and Dr. Glenn LaFantasy, explain the battle was actually fought 2 weeks after the formal treaty was signed, ending the war. But that wasn't known to General Andrew Jackson and his troops of Kentuckians with their long rifles.
Andrew Jackson, who commanded in the South, he had just defeated the Creek Indians and at the Battle of Horseshoe Bend, and he was consolidating his victory, finishing the Indian fighting he was doing there. And he came to the conclusion maybe instead of New Orleans, they were moving from Mobile. So rather than to go directly to New Orleans when he was ordered to go, he stopped off in Mobile, left a sizable force, part of his force in Mobile, which turned out to be a very fortuitous thing, and then moved what was left of his army to New Orleans. He didn't arrive in New Orleans until December the 14th, and he finds a very mixed force. And so when he arrives with his regulars and the Tennessee Cavalry under General Coffey, and he immediately begins to organize this mixed force to defend New Orleans.
Because, as you said, leaving us what you call a sizable force in Mobile, he needs bodies.
Yes, absolutely.
In New Orleans.
Yes.
And it should be mentioned, right before the battle starts, right at the end of the year, he is joined by 2,000 Kentuckians under General Adair, for Adair County's name for.
And Glenn, to just stay on that for 1 second, the Kentuckians came down in force with their something unique to them, with their rifles,
with their long rifles that they used very efficiently for hunting, for going on long hunts. The Kentucky rifle in this time was already famous and notorious. And these Kentuckians were very good at hitting what they shot at, and Jackson knew that. Jackson was also the kind of general, at least in this battle, in which he knew how to play his strengths or the strengths of his troops. So he put the Kentuckians on one of his flanks, knew they would do the job, which they did superbly, and he didn't have to worry about it.
Kentucky in the War of 1812 will lose more men than any other state. Considering a small population, that's incredible. But not here. At here, the casualties are extremely low. Jackson will only lose 39 men, and the British will lose almost 2,500.
Wow. So, yeah. But going back to what we're saying about Jackson needing bodies, he was wheeling and dealing, trying to make deals with the people down there. Pirates and everybody else.
He went to Jean Lafitte, probably the most famous pirate of his time, and negotiated with him, convincing Lafitte that it would be far better for him and his pirate activities if Americans controlled New Orleans rather than the British. And Lafitte bought the argument. One of the strengths that Lafitte and his pirates brought to this battle was their use of artillery and their ability to, we would call it strategic artillery fire. They were able to pick off targets they could pick off a man sitting on a horse. Their firing was so expert, so strategic, because that's what they had used on the high seas to take ships that they didn't want to destroy, because they wanted the ships as prizes to carry into some port. Plus, they wanted the goods on the ship.
See, it was a decisive win for America.
It was a decisive win. When the British attacked on January the 8th, 1815, they seemed to be just going through the motions rather than really taking it that seriously. But Pakenham, rather than calling off the attack, decided go ahead and carry out the attack. After all, they defeated Napoleon's soldiers. They shouldn't have any trouble with American militia. So they launched the attack against these Kentuckians with their long rifles and Tennesseans with their long rifles and Lafitte's pirates, and they suffer enormous casualties. And as a result, by the time it's over, I think Pakenham had four generals under him. When it's over, there's only one general left standing, and he is the one that organizes the forces and moves them out.
This is a word you used before, is hubris.
Yes, hubris was, I think the British suffered from hubris. I think they thought they hadn't, wasn't in a problem. They just run over the top of us. Result, they suffered over 2,500 casualties. A huge number of those are dead. And America loses only 37 people. It's a huge one-sided victory. And the British then are forced to evacuate. And to show you how smart Jackson was, they did think seriously about, for a little while, about taking Mobile, but seeing the sizable force that Jackson left behind, decided that would not be a good idea, and sailed back home.
And, Glenn, even though this battle was fought more than 2 weeks after the Treaty of Ghent had officially ended the War of 1812, this maybe, in the minds of Americans at the time, was the de facto end of the war.
Oh, it was. It was seen as the American victory that had ended the war. For one thing, a newspaper communication domestically in the United States was faster than transatlantic communication. So word of the Battle of New Orleans and the American victory there got into papers across the nation, and it took longer for news of the treaty to reach the United States. When news of the treaty did come, people virtually ignored it and said, well, that's interesting that it was signed before New Orleans, but New Orleans was the battle that won the War of 1812 for Americans and constitutes our second American Revolution against the British.
And America's spirit was sky high.
Sky high. Nationalism pouring forth from every American heart and soul. Patriotism ran high. It was a real moment of unity in this country, and it launches Andrew Jackson into a position of heroism. He's the great hero of America at the time, and that status of hero lasts long enough for him to be elected president in 1828.
Dr. Jack Thacker and Dr. Glenn LaFantasy for WKU Public Radio. This is Joe Corcoran.